We are in the book of Daniel, chapter 7. Daniel, chapter 7 today. God, we ask that you speak to our hearts today as we study your word, God, that we would lift up our eyes to know that you're coming soon, Lord. And God, just help us to live with your coming in view, Lord, to just to know that any moment we could be with you. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Daniel, in chapter 7, covers the same basic material that chapter 2 does. In chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar had the dream, and Daniel interpreted it. And you know, as we've gone through the book of Daniel, it's interesting to look at all that has happened. What we're going to read now goes back to before Belshazzar's feast. So chronologically, what we're doing now is skipping back, and Daniel's now going to start sharing the prophecy portion of the book. Here, again, this portion deals with the world history, with that panorama of the time of the Gentiles. And as you move into chapter 8, it switches back to Hebrew from Chaldean. So, you know, the language changes. It goes back to dealing with Israel. But in this portion we're about to read, it is, again, the nations going from Babylon through to the kingdom that will be in place at the second coming of Christ. In verse 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head while on his bed. Then he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four beasts came up from the sea, each different from the other. Verse 4, the first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth, made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and a man's heart was given to it. And suddenly another beast, a second, like a bear, it was raised up on one side. It had three ribs in its mouth, between its teeth, and they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. After this I looked, and there was another, like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring and breaking in pieces and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots, and there in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Now that's a dream. And he woke up from this going, oh man, you know, what was that about? Now, we're going to get to the interpretation, but, you know, the interpretation just kind of jumps right to the fourth beast. So while we're in this portion, we will look at what each one of these things represents. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar had that dream of the image of a man. And it started with gold. And the purity and expense or value of the metal diminished throughout the statue. The first kingdom being pure gold, the second silver, then bronze, then iron, then clay and iron. The lessening of value, but the strengthening in hardness is what is seen. Babylon, you know, the king of Babylon could order you executed and then change his mind. King of Persia, if he ordered you executed, you were dead. He couldn't go back on it. Persian kings were under the law. Nebuchadnezzar was the law. So Babylon was pure, Persia less pure. But you know, in degrees, as you look at that statue, you see in the last chapter, we saw how once Persia, the Medo-Persian Empire, conquered, one of the things that we see in the Bible is they tried to set up a government to control corruption. And you know, men admire their governments. They look with admiration and even worship towards them. Nebuchadnezzar, when he saw that first image, the world portrayed as an image of a man, appealed to his pride and his ego so that he built a statue and ordered everybody to worship it. Men have been trying to come up with a good government from the beginning of time. There have been kings and kingdoms that have come and gone, all kinds of things. We're living in a time and in a nation when we have great benefits, but I don't know if it's evident to you, but men are so corrupt, I don't think there is a government that can ultimately stay good. The politics are going to get into it. You know, right now, our country has so much strength, but we also are completely weak in the face of our new enemy. Our country is capable of absolutely conquering any sovereign nation on earth, but we can't find a terrorist. And they've got us where we're weak. I don't know if you know, one of Osama bin Laden quotes is, "They love life, we love death. That's why we'll win," he said. And he's right. We love life. You know, our country will probably, close up the borders and bring everybody home if this goes on long enough, if we get hit hard enough. I don't know if we have the tenacity to stay in this battle. I don't know if our country's tough enough. We've gotten soft. We're too privileged. We've gotten by with too much for too long. And you see, that's the problem. Where men are corrupt, but you see, man wants to admire. So the image given to Nebuchadnezzar appeals to our pride, to our admiration. The image given to the man of God, to the prophet, however, is that of wild beasts, brutal, cold-hearted, that there's nothing admirable about them. As you look at them, you can see their strengths, but there's not even, apart from the bear in this, the other animals are have to be, a combination of animals to describe them. And it begins, as Daniel looks out, he said, "I saw, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea," which would be the Mediterranean. So Daniel is given a vision of the ocean, the Mediterranean, and the winds are stirring it. Now, it's interesting because as you study prophecy and things in the Bible, we have to understand some of the symbolism. First of all, when the Bible speaks of the sea, it's talking about the multitudes of humanity. That is, all of man throughout history, not just who's alive today, but, the seas represent all of us who have lived. And out of those comes these various governments. And so it speaks of the great sea. The wind working on the sea speaks of God's sovereignty. You know, it's interesting that the word wind is used over 120 times in the Bible. Over half of those references to wind, God's sovereignty, is what it's speaking of. Isn't that interesting? God is absolutely sovereign. He's made his statement in Daniel already that God puts who he wants in charge. He raises up, he puts down. But God does it through this invisible agency that's like the wind. Call it providence, whatever. The times we live in shape the people. People follow after this or follow after that because the winds that are working on them. You know, you go out on a windy day and you see everything's animated, but you don't see the wind. It's just doing its work. And we can look at the world and go, God's working. And yet man is also has complete free will and is doing what he will, but he doesn't see that ultimately God is the prime mover behind everything. So out of the sea comes these four beasts, and nothing quite like them. One of the things also, a concept that's foreign to us today, is that of kings and kingdoms. We look at them as governments or, forms of rule. We live in a nation where we can't really relate to having a good king. In some ways, if you lived in ancient times and you believed in the Lord and you had a good king who loved his wife and ruled his kingdom with fairness, what you had there would be a living picture of God loving us. And each aspect of society was a reflection of another part of it. A man's marriage to his wife spoke of Christ and the church, the king and the kingdom. And I studied, you know, I get on these weird word tangents and take things back as far as I can. And what's interesting with the word kingdom is there really is, in the origin, no separate word for king and kingdom. They're one word. You see, in the ancients' mind, king and kingdom were the same thing. If you spoke, you know, to somebody from those days, if they spoke of the kingdom of Christ, they knew they were speaking of Christ himself, that he is his kingdom and his kingdom is his. Without a king, there's no kingdom. Without a kingdom, there's no king. And so they didn't have separate words. We tend to look at these things separately. And you see, here, when we go into this, we're going to realize it's talking, on the one hand, of the Babylonian, the Persian, the Greek empires. On the other hand, it's speaking of individual kings until we come to that final king who will be the Antichrist. So, the first beast, like a lion with eagle's wings. I watched till its wings were plucked off, lifted up from the earth, made to stand on his feet like a man. A man's heart was given to it. So this kingdom begins like a lion with wings. Throughout Babylon, around the palace, and throughout the city, and you've probably seen them, is the lion, the statues of lions with wings. And that's what Daniel sees here. Now, when Daniel's writing this, Belshazzar's king, so Babylon is still standing strong. This is before the fall of Babylon. The Persian Empire and the Medes have not yet really formed, and he's writing this down. Now, here's the interesting thing. This lion is powerful and swift. And you know that lions are majestic as far as animals go. Now, if you've ever watched accurate shows about lions hunting, you know you wouldn't want to be hunted. And then picture a lion with wings. No way. Get me out of here. You know, could you picture yourself walking somewhere and coming across a lion that has eyes that are filled with hunger staring at you, and he has wings? Where are you going to go? You see, lions are very deliberate in pursuing their prey. Once they start, they won't stop. It's different than other animals. But yet, this animal loses its wings in the process of its kingdom. That means it loses its swiftness. And then it stands up and is given the heart of a man. And at that point, is completely vulnerable and conquered. It's over for it. I think it's interesting that Nebuchadnezzar was a man who was given the heart of a beast. Babylon is a beast that was given the heart of a man. But both are destroyed. Neither is admirable. The second kingdom. Suddenly, another beast. Second, like a bear. Was raised on one side, three ribs in its mouth, between its teeth. They said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. Fierce, more brutal, less majestic, less swift, less glorious, but every bit as deadly. Bears do not necessarily hunt or kill every time like a lion does. Bears will kill you just for being in their territory. Or bears will be interested in berries and leave you alone. You never know. They're different. They're brutal, though. If you get attacked by a bear, they just crush you. They don't need to have any hunting skills. They're just strong enough to. Now, the Persian Empire, the Babylonian Empire is fitly described. The Persian Empire was brutal. And you see, I'm speaking now, I'm saying, you call it the Medo-Persian Empire, but this bear begins and raises up off of one side, showing that it was a one-sided thing, that the Medes and the Persians came together, but eventually the Medes disappeared, and it was the Persian Empire that lasted for the next 200-some-odd years. And the Persians were known for their brutality. The world, if somebody told you the Persians are coming to our country to conquer it, a lot of people just surrendered because of their reputation for brutality, for the things that they did. I mean, they were fitly described as a bear. What the three ribs are, I'm not sure. So, you know, won't go into that. But it's told, arise, devour much flesh. I don't know if you've ever been around bears, but I when I was, well, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, when I wasn't thinking right, we used to run at bears up in the Sierra Mountains, you know, the brown bears, and they would run away from us. And we got away with it, you know. Now, all it would have taken is for us to overlook a cub somewhere, and we would have been dead. But, you know, we were deluded. But then I was up in Juneau, Alaska. We had to walk to a retreat center, and on the way there, I got exhausted. I was having asthma. I was doing this. Are we there yet? Or, you know, where? How much farther? You know, how long do we have to walk? It was kind of like ankle deep. Pebbles that every time you stepped, your foot moved back half a step, and you know, you just weren't getting anywhere. And finally, I said, you know, I need to sit down and rest. And the pastor said, look around and go, well, you know, the bears come down to the water right here. This isn't a good place to rest. I go, what bears? Well, the grizzly bears. What do you mean, grizzly bears, you know? You know, I said, okay, I got a lot of energy, you know, made it to the retreat center. And that night, you know, they tried to put me in a cabin where I had to go outside to find a bathroom, and I wound up sleeping in the cafeteria next to the bathroom, so I wouldn't have to go outside. And there were bear prints that big, and we're going through the camp that night. I'm just going, these people are crazy. They're all relaxed and calm sitting here. You know, every little noise, I'm jumping and looking over my shoulder. You wouldn't want to be pursued by it. But then we come to the third beast. I look. There was another like a leopard. It had on its back four wings of a bird. Beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. As he looked at this one, the leopard, in the time that Daniel, and in that period of history, if a man said, you know, if you spoke of a person who had a fast horse, you would say his horse is faster than a leopard. Leopards were a standard for speed that people spoke of. Four wings speaks of incredible speed. And the leopard's swiftness, rather than its brutality of a bear or the majesty of a lion, is a very different type of an animal. And this goes on to having four heads, dominion given to it. After 200 years, Alexander the Great comes along. Macedonia, he brings under his control. From there, incredibly, while he's still a young man, he sweeps all the way through Africa and makes deep inroads into India. You know, the guy took Afghanistan, all these places that were considered completely he just marched through them and conquered them and ruled over them. And he did it so quickly that when he conquered everything, he got kind of depressed and started drinking and got sick and died, and his generals divided up what he took. A leopard with four wings and four heads is an exact description of the Greek Empire. Josephus, I think it was, recorded that the priests from Jerusalem, when they heard Alexander was coming, took a copy of Daniel and showed it to him, and he bypassed destroying Jerusalem because of it. Now it's hard to verify, but there is one written account that did happen. And so he went through with that lightning speed. The fourth he saw in night visions. Dreadful, terrible, iron teeth, devouring, breaking, trampling. In a way, this fourth is just such pure brutality, there is nothing on earth to compare it to. You can't say it was like a lion or it was like a bear. You go over to the book of Revelation, the beast there, when it's described, go and read, you'll see that bear, all of the symbolism here is included in that. And it's interesting because there is a residual of all those kingdoms still around today. We may not know what we owe to the Babylonians, but I can tell you a little bit. Idolatry. That influence has never quite gone away. The Persians and all of these empires have left. The Greeks are probably the most notable. Even though Rome conquered all the what was left of the Roman of the Greek Empire, the Greek culture remained very strong. It's kind of like this. You go around the world, people hate America, but they all want Levi's. You know, long after we're gone, people are going to be wearing Levi's. You know, we are a very dominant culture on the earth today. And even if we cease to exist, the cultural influence we have, you know, people say they hate America, and yet they admire it to some degree. It's a strange thing, and people have always been that way. Conquered by Rome, but yet they go, but look at them getting rich, Roman roads. You know, this last fourth kingdom, the wording of it, a beast, had 10 horns. Rome in 241 B.C. started its conquest, and it continued. And by the way, the last vestiges of power of Rome didn't disappear until 1453. I mean, it remained in power for a long time. Rome conquered the world because it invented waterproof cement. Without that, they couldn't. They could build bridges over rivers that remained, and therefore they could get their soldiers anywhere they wanted. Rome's reason for building roads was to conquer the world. They were incredibly swift. If a country rose up against them, they had these iron teeth, and they stamped it out. They would kill entire populations so that the rest of the world would stay in line. You know, they would just take everybody and kick them out of a country, whatever. But they could move their troops very rapidly. They had a rapid deployment. They could go there in force. Legions could show up in a matter of a couple of weeks anywhere in the world. They got there quicker than we can, by the way. They had the logistics worked out to get their entire army all the ways around the Mediterranean in a matter of weeks. It takes us a year almost to deploy our troops. You know, it's incredible what they did. And they conquered. They were brutal. They ruled over everything. And so we look at them. Then the end of the Roman Empire is these 10 horns, and out of them one with the eyes of a man speaking pompous words. Again, the beast of Revelation 13. Go read there. You'll see the symbolism. Now, verse 9. I watched till thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow. The hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was a fiery flame, its wheels a burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. I watched, and because of the sound of the pompous words which the horn was speaking, I watched till the beast was slain, and its body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. And for the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. To him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away. His kingdom, the one which shall not be destroyed. So we follow Babylon, the second coming of Christ, the establishment of the millennial reign of Christ on earth. And in the process of this, Daniel is suddenly taken to a heavenly perspective. And in heaven, here's the first thing said. I watched, thrones were put in place. The King James says thrones were cast down, which can give you the impression of the thrones or dominions of this world being toppled over. But in the language there, to set up or to toss down a throne can get confusing, because the Persians, if they set up a place for a person to rule, they generally sat on a padded pillow type thing on the floor. And so they would say they would cast down a throne for somebody to sit on so that they could come and rule in that location. So here what we see is God setting up thrones, but before we see anything happen on earth, these thrones are set up in heaven, this activity begins, and the books are open. But it's not the books of final judgment. It's not the judgment seat of Christ. The books are open because of this blasphemous voice of this little horn that's risen up, the Antichrist, who's speaking blasphemous things. And the judgment is the destruction of the Antichrist. And then after that, the second coming of Christ to earth. Now here's the thing. We're living in a time, I don't know if you noticed, but the entire age we're living in is skipped over by Daniel. There's nothing said of the age we live in. The Roman Empire is long gone. The 10 kings have not yet come. Why this gap? There's no other gap in what Daniel's done. Followed continuously from Babylon to the second coming of Christ, because Israel's program has a pause, a parenthesis that we live in today. The church today exists. We have this special place. And we're looking for Christ to catch us up to the air. Before these events, I believe we will already be reigning with Christ. And when the books are open on the Antichrist, we will already be out of here. See, the second coming has two parts. Part one, you and I get raptured. We're caught up to meet the Lord in the air. Part two, Jesus comes in the cloud, sets foot in Jerusalem. One, he comes as a thief in the night. Two, he comes as a conquering king. And he's coming soon. You know, Chuck always used to say, you can tell when the Christmas decorations go up that it's almost Thanksgiving. And you can see when everything is in place, it's almost time for the rapture. Al Lindsay, in 1970, wrote The Late Great Planet Earth. And, you know, there's no more Soviet Union, some of the things he was wrong about. But you know what? In 1970, he wrote, keep your eyes on Iran. He said it has to become change. When in 1970, there was a Shah in Iran. And it was pro-West. The Ayatollah came along. Al Lindsay said it would have. Al Lindsay said, keep your eye. When Al wrote that book, there was no confederation going on in Europe. There was no economic union. It wasn't even spoken about. Now they're working on bringing these nations under, you know, they're having trouble. It's unwieldy. But they're passing laws. They're bringing, you know, all the decorations are in place for the second coming. It's ready to fall into place. This Antichrist will rise up out of 10 nations that will be that final power. And again, we will see. So Daniel, watch. Throne set up. Books open. Antichrist is written. Now, I, Daniel, verse 15, was grieved in my spirit within my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. I came near to one of those who stood by and asked the truth of all of this. He told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. The great beasts are four, and four kings which arise out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. Then I wished to know the truth about the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron, nails of bronze, which devoured and broke in pieces and trampled the residue with its feet, and the ten horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, to which three fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth which spoke pompous words, whose appearance was greater than his fellows. Verse 21, I was watching, and the same horn was making war against the saints, which would be the Jews and others who have come to believe in Jesus during the tribulation, and prevailing against them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was made in favor of the Most High, of the saints of the Most High, and the time came for the saints to possess the kingdom. Then he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, and shall be different from all other kingdoms, shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. Ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall rise after them, and shall be different from the first ones, and shall subdue three kings, shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and law. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time, and times, and half a time. But the court shall be seated. They shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it for other. Then the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom. All dominions shall serve and obey him. This is the end of the account. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts greatly troubled me, and my countenance changed, but I kept the matter in my heart. After the interpretation, he was going, what? What's this about? Now, from other things in the Bible, the Antichrist will rise up out of 10 kingdoms and will come to power. He's going to make a deal. Many of the Jews will think he is the Messiah. The world's going to wonder at this guy. He's going to seduce the world by showing them a way to peace, but in the end, going to go back on everything. It really looks like halfway through, the guy goes through a complete turnaround in what he does. There are historical instances of, like, Caesar Nero, who was a very good Caesar, raising up building programs and really getting Rome on the right track, and all of a sudden he snaps and just starts killing people and destroying. And many people feel that Nero flipped out because Paul preached the gospel to him and he rejected it, and Paul drove him crazy. You know, could be. But whatever happened, he started out good, turned very demonic, this Antichrist, will have the same type of pattern. He's this man who will throw down three other kings, but will grow from insignificance to being greater than all the others. Now, we're going to come to another horn in the next chapter, which is a little different. But this one, you see, here's what's about to happen. The church is going to be taken off the earth. At that time, the Antichrist will start working his way to power. He's going to broker a deal with the Muslims and the Jews, put a partition up, and put the temple. That temple, they don't know he's setting it up so he can take over and proclaim himself as God. At the 3.5 year mark, what we just read here, that the saints will be turned over to him for 3.5 years. He will go out, hunt down everybody he can catch, execute. It's going to be a horrible time. One thing after another. Read the book of Revelation. It covers that 7 year period. It's going to be one dark time in the history of the world. But here's the wonderful thing. We're going to be home. We'll be out of here. Jesus is going to come take us. I don't know about you, but today's not too soon. Let's go home. Come quickly, Lord, because we're going to be in his kingdom forever and ever. It will never end. We belong to him. We're his. Now, amazing, that the church, that all of us have come to know Christ, that it's only vaguely referred to in the Old Testament. At the time when God would bring in the Gentiles, and here we are. But prophetically, we live in a time just skipped over. But you see, 10 kings. And when you read the details, I follow and read up on what's happening in Europe and the European Union and how they work together. And it's spooky. I mean, they really are a force that in the future will outdo us. Economically, for the last 25 years, they have systematically been posturing themselves to be stronger than us. That they have been working on diminishing our financial power and shifting it to their own. And one thing after another, as they've come up in their constitution, all the various things that they're trying to bring all the nations under, one of the things that was put out there that still is not enforced because they haven't come together is a law against cults. And you know what? Under their definition, anybody except a church state is a cult. And so they've already effectively, they're passing laws that will effectively completely control and put under the state, put every Christian and everybody else under control of the state and make it against the law to preach the gospel. And it's happening. It's coming together. We're in those days. And we just need to keep our eyes open. Because you see, he's coming as a thief when you don't expect it. When you're not looking for it, he'll come and he'll take us away. And I want to be praying and faithful when that day happens. Let's pray. Lord, I do pray that as we look at all these things, this Antichrist who is about to come on the world scene, the panorama of world history that you put before us today, God, I just thank you that we know that the four kingdoms of men, their brutality, will give way to the fifth kingdom, and that is yours, which will never end. And God, I thank you that you have given us citizenship in your kingdom. And Lord, you are our King. Help us to be found faithful when you come to take us home. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you. Have a great week.